Man, I never imagined a time when I chose that as our theme song that it would still be on the air 25 years later, still be playing the same thing. The band I was in back then, that's us like doing our own recording, by the way. I just thought it's rather interesting. It's me and my friend Rich Umbach on lead guitar there.
Just mucking about.
That's right. Anyway, it's Friday. Welcome to the weekend. And thank you so much for joining us. So glad you could be with us.
Everybody's working for the weekend.
Working for the weekend to get to it. So we can put that all behind us now. Fun starts now. As you might know, of course, on Fridays, we do a series of, no, basically we call the show How Music Changed, because we've got 250 topics that we want to discuss in depth in this and also subsequent lifetimes, because it's going to take a long time to do this, maybe 150 years to do it right. But to cover all 250 topics, yeah, it's going to take some time. But we started a new series a couple of weeks back called The Great American Songbook. This is part 3, and we started this around 1920, and I love to do things chronologically, because when you arrange things chronologically, you can sort of hear how things change and grow. Sometimes it's nice to mix things up. It's very possible that we will do some series in a sporadic manner and not worry about whether or not it's chronological. But something like this, I think, works beautifully when it is, because things are so different in the 20s than they will eventually become in the 50s. And that's going to be the scope of this series on the Great American Songbook. So this being part 3, we continue our swing through the early years of the songbook by honoring a few of the writers responsible for establishing its existence. By 1924, records began to become prevalent, and the sales of 78s made it easier to determine what songs were genuinely popular, as opposed to sheet music sales, and which was being sold to musicians and people who would want to play in their parlors. You know, some of these songwriters remain household names, and unfortunately, though, others are virtually forgotten. But the music lives beyond the writers' reputations. Mixing, say, Gershwin and Berlin is always a pleasure. But here we have the added pleasures of adding lesser-known writers. It was odd that their names aren't household names, I think. People like Vincent Jaumans and Irving Caesar, Ray Henderson, Sam Lewis, and Joe Young. Those are some of the people we're going to be discussing today that we're going to add to the mix. You may recognize some of the names, but it's even more likely that you'll recognize the music, despite its age. Now, the whole point of The Great American Songbook is to focus a bit on the writers, but to be honest, the real focus is the music. That's why we're here, not to rattle off biographies about everybody. But the next song that I want to play actually dates back a little bit to like the very beginning of where the first show could have been. In fact, it could have been in the first show. We've already discussed a little bit about Richard Whiting and Gus Kahn, Raymond B. Egan. Those are the three songwriters for this song. As I said, dating back to 1921, it was actually the title of the song actually appears in the book Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. And even Dorothy Parker wrote about it in one of her famous short stories, Big Blonde. The song is entitled Ain't We Got Fun, and the version we're going to play was recorded a bit further up the road in the 50s by Peggy Lee.
Every morning, every evening, ain't we got fun? Not much money, oh, but honey, ain't we got fun? The rent's unpaid, dear, we haven't a car. But anyway, dear, we'll stay as we are. Even if we owe the grocer, though we have fun. Tax collectors getting closer, still we have fun. There's nothing surer, the rich get rich and the poor get poorer. In the meantime, in between time, ain't we got fun? Don't we have fun? Still we have fun. Even if we owe the grocer, don't we have fun? Tax collectors getting closer. What fun. There's nothing surer. The rich get rich and the poor get poorer. In the meantime, in between time, don't we have fun? It's a ball.
Why did that sound like Nelson Riddle arranged that?
You know, that's a probably, I don't know it. I don't have the information in front of me, but it does sound like it was a Nelson Riddle arrangement. Very much so. I would bet money that you're right about that, now that you mention it. It's a really clever song. I mean, the whole thing about the Great American Songbook is that there's something clever about it that keeps it popular. It's also interesting to note that at this point in time, there's almost all of the stuff, not all of it. There's a lot of songwriters that do work as solos, but it's incredibly common that you would have one writer responsible for music and a lyricist who would provide the words. Very rarely, well, not rarely, but it just wasn't that common for one writer to handle all of that, which is almost the exact opposite of the way that songs are written in for the past 50 some odd years, if not more. But back then, you have to realize that a lot of this stuff was being written for Broadway, and that meant that the songs had to be somehow incorporated into a stage show. And that meant that the lyrics had to coincide with what the stage show was going to be about. So when the person who was writing the music before the words wouldn't necessarily even know what the theme would be. So that was left to the writer. And if the words were written first, then the person who was writing the words to move the story along would have to bring it to somebody to help make it musical, thus bringing in the songwriter. One team, the biggest team we've already covered, was the Gershwins, the Gershwin brothers, George and Ira. It's amazing, really, in so many levels, because George Gershwin died so young. I mean, he was only 38 years old when he passed away. And meanwhile, his brother, Ira, didn't even start getting involved in music at all until he was 25. So that doesn't leave a really huge window of opportunity for them to be writing together. But when they did team up, they became one of the most influential forces in the history of music theater. Broadway changed because of them.
Absolutely.
Actually, Broadway more or less was created in some ways because of them. You know,
before that, it was more like vaudeville.
Yeah, there was vaudeville, Tin Pan Alley, and all of a sudden, because of what the Gershwins were able to bring to the game and have their songs being used in these shows on
it
Broadway.
Was theater.
Right. All of a sudden, theater became the target of what they were doing. Now, George himself started out as a song plugger on Tin Pan Alley. I mean, who didn't? I could say that about so many of these songwriters from this era. That's where it all began. But he eventually would come up, he wrote the song Swanee, which was heard by Al Jolson, and Jolson decided he was going to sing it, and that is the song that more or less brought George Gershwin to everybody's attention. But George Gershwin loved to do things that were revolutionary and different. And it wasn't long after that, just like 4 or 5 years, when he composed Rhapsody in Blue and is now jamming this newfangled type of music called jazz and making it work with classical music. He'd got Ferdy Grafay to orchestrate his writing, and it was performed by the Paul Whiteman Concert Band. And next thing you know, Gershwin is something of a superstar, of a songwriter. He sort of did the same thing later on with Porgy and Bess. You know, is it a Broadway musical? Is it an opera? It was just, he loved to basically walk a line where he wasn't following. He was creating something new, a new palette, so to speak. And one of the shows that broke them wide open, really that, again, is very responsible for starting Broadway to be what it eventually came to be known as, was the show Lady Be Good, a musical comedy. And the song was actually eventually deleted from that show, though, and eventually put into a subsequent one called Strike Up the Band. And the song that we're talking about is called The Man I Love. In this instance, I have a version of it by none other than the fabulous Billie Holiday.
Along the man I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love, and when he comes my way, I'll do my best to make him stay. He'll look at me and smile, I'll understand, then in a little while he'll take my seems absurd, I know we both won't say a word. Maybe I shall meet him someday, maybe Monday, maybe not. Still I'm sure to meet him one day, maybe Tuesday will be mine. Meant for two, from which I'll never roam. Oh, what would you? And so all else above, I'm dreaming of the man I
doing this series, because there's so many different angles talking about the songwriters and then being able to play any version of it. The idea, the beauty of the Great American Songbook is that there's so many versions of these songs to choose from, and you can we can have some fun with it. Hopefully that's what I'll be where I'll be going. But now we've got two new writers to introduce that we haven't discussed yet in this series. The composer is Vincent Yeomans, and the lyricist is a man named Irving Caesar. You might not know their names. Like I said, not household names, but Vincent Yeomans wrote music and had basically teamed up with name almost every great lyricist of the 20th century, it seems. He wrote with Ira Gershwin. He wrote the music for Oscar Hammerstein, Buddy De Silva, Gus Kahn, Edward Heyman. He published less than 100 songs in his entire lifetime, which is remarkably small for a professional songwriter. But a good number of them are considered classics, including this next one that we're going to play. Now, in this instance, he had a song that was called Who's Who With You, and he was writing for a musical called No, No, Nanette. Yes, that one, because it became revived and it became a huge hit again. Again, the Great American Songbook, it never dies. So, it, you know, in 1924, 1925, he's trying to come up with a song that the hero could sing to the heroine of No, No, Nanette. And he had this idea of a song, Who's Who With You? And he had the music. And he, in this instance, he met Irving Caesar, a lyricist, and basically told him what his idea was. And there on the spot, Caesar started jotting down a mock-up lyric. Just like, okay, how about this? You know, try this. Saying that, you know, we'll come back and we'll fix it. And Yeomans immediately loved what he did. And he said, don't touch it. That's the song. And so it remains. The song is T for Two. Now, I'm sorry for Irving Caesar, but the version that I chose happens to be instrumental, Latin version, by none other than Tito Puente. Hope you enjoy it. I chose that version because as a kid growing up, I remember that T for Two became one of the most famous cha-cha songs.
I was going to say, there's always a good cha-cha party.
Exactly, exactly. And I figured I got to play like a killer cha-cha version of that song. And I think the Tito Puente version might be the best of all the cha-cha versions that there are. Now, we've covered already Irving Berlin in both of our previous shows. And already I am beyond impressed. I always thought of Irving Berlin as being like a real old-fashioned songwriter who, like Alexander's Ragtime Band was where we started with him. And, okay, that's all well and good, but even though it's part of the Great American Songbook, it has aged. That song has. But what it turns out that Irving Berlin is also like a stunningly stunning romanticist. If you remember, also another song that we played in the very beginning of our first show, if you were listening, was a song called When I Lost You, which he had written after his first wife had died from an illness just 6 months after he married her. Deeply, deeply romantic song, incredibly sad, and it also derailed his career for a long time because he couldn't even think of writing. Well, now this is a totally different situation. At this point in time now, it's about 3 or 4 years later, he meets another woman, falls in love, and marries her. Even though her parents didn't want that to happen, I remember that he ended up like having to like bring her to England, if I remember correctly, to basically keep the parents from interfering. But anyway, he married her, and he basically, as a wedding gift to her, he wrote this song, and he also gave her full royalties for it at the same time as he wrote it for her. And it is truly one of the most romantic songs I've ever heard, and I have a version of it that is so touching that I think you'll understand exactly why this song could actually put like a little lump in your throat. The song is called Always, and this incredible version is by the fabulous Brazilian artist Caetano Veloso on 90.3 WHPC.
Just a day, not for just just a year, but always.
That's the great Caetano Veloso performing a song written by the great Irving Berlin titled Always. I'm sure you know it. That's the point here, playing the Great American Songbook. Now, the track just before that, when I played T for Two, that was Vincent Jaumans and Irving Caesar. Let's go back to them. One more song from the same show, in fact, also from No No Nanette. This was another song that became a big hit for them as a team. It's called I Want to Be Happy. And the version that I've got, once again, very much emphasis on the music, because it's the way it is. Sorry about that, Irving Caesar. But this, the performance is credited to Lester Young, the fabulous sax player, who, by the way, played very often with Billie Holiday, who we just played a couple songs ago, and featuring Nat King Cole as piano player. I Want to Be Happy.
Thank you.
I'm choosing a song like that now, even though it doesn't have the lyrics, is because it turns out, I mean, the Great American Songbook was almost like food for the jazz musicians.
It just shows the versatility of the music itself.
That, yes, of course. And that's exactly what, like, if it wasn't for the fact that these songs were so well written and so good, jazz might not have ever really developed to become what it was. This was like really superfood for the jazz musicians. Until the 50s, almost every jazz musician relied on the Great American Songbook for material, and you know, basically to base the change, you know, to supply a melody and the changes for them to play on. So there's a great example of that. I Want to Be Happy, Lester Young with Nat King Cole. Next up is another trio new to the this series. This is the first time we're going to be hearing the names Ray Henderson, Sam Lewis, and Joe Young, three songwriters for this one song. Should say, well, one songwriter, two lyricists. That is incredible to me. Two lyricists? You know, but this is exactly what happened here. Ray Henderson was born up in Buffalo, moved to New York. Guess what? He became a composer in Tin Pan Alley, like everybody else. He eventually would start a songwriting, a publishing company with Lou Brown and Buddy DeSilva, whose names will appear again and again in this series. But in this instance, it's a two different men who he ended up teaming up with. Ray Henderson is responsible for songs like Classics, which I could include, but I think they're like a little bit maybe too old school. Like if it's too old fashioned, it might not be Great American Songbook. Songs like Bye Bye Blackbird, Has Anybody Seen My Girl, 5'2", Eyes of Blue. All that stuff was written by Ray Henderson. He supplied the music. He also wrote this song, though, with Sam Lewis and Joe Young, two different lyricists, who also basically had teamed up writing songs with a lot of other people. They were both singers, actually, who happened to be lyricists. So the song is called I'm Sitting on Top of the World, that the three of them composed together. And the version that we'll be playing right now, again, we'll jump forward into the 50s. And this version of I'm Sitting on Top of the World is performed by Les Paul and Mary Ford.
Top of the world, just rolling along, rolling along. I'm quitting the blues of the world, just singing a song, singing a song. Hallelujah, I just phoned the parson, he parked ready to call. Just like Humpty Dumpty, I'm ready to fall. I'm sitting on top of the world, just rolling along, rolling along. On top of the world.
Well, that's just awesome in so many ways.
Oh, wow. He was very creative, that Les Paul. I mean, he was an inventor, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's him. Well, the whole multi-tracking thing, he was the first one to do it. And he became a master of tape. The reason his guitar sounds as incredible as it does there is because he would change the tape speed. He'd record at one speed and play it back at another, and which allowed him to basically get all these crazy pitch things. Incredibly
smart.
I mean, it was there waiting for somebody to discover it, and he was the man that did it. And then not only that, but also overdubbing, getting, you know, Mary Ford to harmonize with herself.
Yes.
You know, pretty remarkable. Although we're here to talk about the songs and not the performances.
Yes. But we digress.
But now we get, again, two newcomers to our series, but they will be around. Well, one of them certainly will be around till we get to the very end of this series. I'm talking about Richard Rodgers and the first partner as a songwriting team, Lauren's Heart. To say that they are responsible for a tremendous legacy of fabulous songs would be an incredible understatement. Richard Rodgers alone is responsible for 43 Broadway musicals. Incredible. Over 900 songs to his credit. And the first half of his career was done pretty much almost exclusively with Lauren's Heart. Now, he was born in Queens, you know. Heart also born in Harlem. So they're both New Yorkers. And Richard Rodgers starts playing the piano very young age, at the age of 6.
Wow.
And he's influenced by one of the writers that we've already covered, Jerome Kern. So he starts coming up with all these different ideas based upon what he's hearing from other songwriters and musicians and operettas that his parents loved. And he meets Lauren's Heart, happenstance, who at the time, he actually was working, Lauren's Heart was working, had a job in theater. He was translating German plays into English. Very much a wordsmith guy. That's what Lauren's Heart is about. And Rodgers is obviously struggling very hard to come up with a musical. And they team up and they try to write a musical comedy, a bunch of amateur shows, no real commercial success in the beginning at all for quite a while. They make their professional debut in 1919 on a Broadway musical comedy called A Lonely Romeo. Not much came of that. Another followed called Poor Little Ritz Girl. Totally forgotten, right? And at this point in time, then they start another professional draft out called The Melody Man. It didn't even premiere for another 4 years. So Rodgers is disenchanted with the music business. He figures it's not going to work out. In fact, he tells his friends that he's planning on quitting and he's going to take a job selling children's underwear.
Oh, wow.
That was really about to happen when finally some songs that he had written with Lauren's Heart started to break. They had they wrote songs for a benefit show for the Theater Guild, and the critics thought it was great. And I mean, I can't talk enough about the genius of Richard Rodgers, but in this instance, I really want to talk about the genius of the lyricist Lauren's Heart. The song is called Manhattan, and there are so many songs about the stories of young love and you don't have money, but you're going to be happy and you're going to be okay because, you know, love will get us through this, all that sort of stuff. Well, that's the theme of this song, but it's probably the most clever of that type of song I've ever heard. It's a New York couple that can't afford to go on a honeymoon. They can't go to Niagara, say. So they decide that they're going to stay in New York and visit some of the worst possible sites that you could imagine. None of this is like basically playing up like the beauty of Manhattan, but it's done so cleverly that they make it sound like wonderful. For example, like, you know, a subway ride in the summer is not pleasant in the 20s. This is no air conditioning, but you know, it's all about the balmy breezes of the subway and you know, the gently gliding push carts on Mott Street, which you can imagine with these guys, you know, pushing these wooden carts and screaming and yelling and squeaking and everything. It's all really tongue-in-cheek and incredibly genius. And the way that he can rhyme the word spoil with goyle, it just basically plays up, A, the New York theme, and really the true genius of Lawrence Hart. The song is called Manhattan, and my favorite version of it by far was performed by Dinah Washington, 90.3 WHPC.
We'll take Manhattan, the Bronx and Staten Island too. It's lovely going through the zoo. Well, it's very fancy on old Delancey Street, you know. The subway charms us so. When balmy breezes blow to and fro, and tell me what street compares with Mott Street in July. Sweet push carts gently gliding by. The great big city's a wondrous toy, just made for a girl and boy. Kiss we stole, soul to soul, and for some high fare, we'll go to my fair lady say. We'll hope it closes
on the 1st of May. This is moving day. Spring is here, so blow your job, throw your job away. Now's the time to trust to your wanderlust. In the city's dust you weigh, must you weigh, just you weigh. In a mountain greenery where God paints the scenery just two crazy people together. While you love your lover, let blue skies be your coverlet. When it rains, we'll laugh at the weather. And if you're good, I'll search for wood so you can cook while I stand looking. Beans could get no keener reception in a beanery. Bless our mountain greenery home. In a mountain greenery where God paints the scenery just two crazy people together. Oh, how we love sequestering where no pests are pestering. No dear mama holds us in tether. Mosquitoes here won't bite you, dear. I'll let them sting me on the finger. We could find no cleaner retreat from life's machinery than our mountain greenery home. In our mountain greenery where God paints the scenery. In our mountain greenery home.
That, of course, was Bing Crosby performing Mountain Greenery with the Buddy Bregman Orchestra. I played them back-to-back because you must know, after my introduction about Lawrence Hart and the incredible genius of his lyrics, that that second song was also written by Rodgers and Hart, Mountain Greenery, again, with amazing, amazing lyrics by Lawrence Hart. The rhymes are, he breaks words up into pieces, actually, to make them rhyme.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everybody else would take a book and go, you know, what rhymes with orange? What rhymes with, and you know,
yeah.
You know, try to think of something. But what he'll do is, like, he'll have a word like beanery, but he would rhyme it with keenery-ception. What would have a kinery-ception? Then beanery is what he rhymes it with, and then he gets to mountain greenery. Like, yow, yikes! Amazing. I can't say enough about those two guys. And I'll probably have a chance to prove that as we continue this series, because they're going to come up again and again and again and again. Now, again, here are two newcomers to the show. Actually, I don't think we're going to be seeing too much of them in this series. The composer is Lou Pollack. And the lyricist is Jack Yellen. In this instance, I mean, Jack Yellen goes, his songs go back to the heart of Tin Pan Alley most of his stuff, like Happy Days or Here Again, Ain't She Sweet, very popular songs. Now that it's the modern era, it's the mid-20s, he comes up with a song basically about his Jewish upbringing. He was born to a Jewish family in Poland, and he wrote this song for Sophie Tucker, and it became a big hit for her in the 20s. Later on, it was covered by Connie Francis, who ended up having a hit with it in the 50s. And that's the version that we're going to be playing right here. Connie Francis is performing My Yiddish Mama.
Of things I should be thankful for, I've had a goodly share. And as I sit here in the comfort of a cozy chair, my fancy takes me to a humble east side tenement, three flights up in the rear, to where my childhood days were spent. It wasn't much like paradise, but mid the dirt and
yikes.
Wow.
Go get him, Connie. All right, we've only got a couple. This hour flew by so fast, I can't believe it.
Unbelievable.
I want to squeeze in one more song, so I won't get into too much information about the songwriter, who in this instance is also the performer. This is a talent who could do everything. He was a great comedian, a fabulous piano player, a world-famous organist, and wrote some of the classic songs of this entire era. Here, performing his first huge hit, is Fats Waller. The song is called Squeeze Me, performed by everybody from Louis Armstrong to Maria Muldaur. Here's the original by Fats. Take care, folks. Hope to see you next Friday. Bye-bye.
And squeeze me again. Baby, don't stop till I tell you when. Baby, squeeze me and kiss me some more. Just like you did before. Little Cupid is standing close by. Come on, don't let your fat daddy cry. Pick me up, oh babe, on your knee, oh babe. I get so old, you know, when you squeeze me.